From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I can't imagine life without my admittedly oddball collection of houseplants, many of which have been with me for several decades. So I was delighted recently to meet today's guest, Rob Moffat, whose Los Angeles-based botanical design studio specializes in matching their clients with houseplants that are just the way I like them. Not just pretty, but possessing loads of personality, often sculptural in stature like living artworks, capable of forging a connection to the person caring for them, and with the potential to endure, maybe even for a lifetime of companionship. Rob's here to tell us about some favorites that you may wish to consider welcoming into your life, too, and where he finds them, hint, probably not at the big box store or supermarket. He'll also share some of the tricks for how he shows them off to their best advantage. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Rob Moffat is a former nurse turned plantsman. He founded his business called The House Plant, spelled H-A-U-S, not H-O-U-S-E, 5 years ago, at first as a plant truck that he'd take to farmers markets. The last 2.5 years, The House Plant has resided in a permanent home on West 3rd Street in the Miracle Mile neighborhood of L.A. He and his staff of 13 create designs to incorporate distinctive plants into clients' homes and businesses and provide plant care services, too, for some of those customers. I'm glad to welcome him here today. Hi, Rob. It's good to talk to you again.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Yes. And it was so fun to talk to you to do the New York Times column that we did together recently, because our conversations around that and sort of the almost like, what is a house plant and what does it all mean? It really got me thinking about how important they are to me in my life. I mean, I've always known it, but it made it conscious, I guess. And so, you know, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit at the start here about what roles they play in our lives, mine, yours, the customers. You know, the most obvious one is beauty. And I guess that's why people call you up and say, oh, I'd like to have you come and help me make my office or my home more beautiful. But that's not where it stops, is it?
No, not at all. And that's not where it really started for me either. Plants for me sort of started as a form of therapy. I started collecting plants as a hobby, and I was a nurse at UCLA. And on my days off, because, you know, as a nurse, you're working 3 days a week. So on my days off, I used to travel, and then I, you know, started gardening a little bit on my patio, and then it turned into collecting plants, and I killed a lot along the way, but that was part of the learning process. But it was really a form of therapy and sort of the ritual of, you know, caring for plants. And then it just sort of evolved, and I started working at a friend's plant store. And then after a while, during the beginning of the pandemic, he was like, you're good at this. You should really consider doing your own thing. So that's kind of what drove me to start the houseplant.
Yes. And I think one of the things we talked about when we did the time story is also there's, once you have a houseplant in your residence, you know, there's also that connection to nature. And I say I'm in a cold winter area where we don't engage as much with the garden, quote unquote, you know, as in certain of the winter months as we do the rest of the year. And so the house plant is like that everyday connection, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're very lucky here in Southern California. I actually grew up in Wisconsin, which had some pretty cold winters. So when I moved out here as a travel nurse initially, you know, I'd just be walking on the streets in Venice or West Hollywood and would see some of the, you know, incredible plant life. And that's what kind of first piqued my interest, is just like the year round opportunity to grow some really interesting things.
Yeah, and you do grow some really interesting things. I think you use the quote in the Times story. Some of them are Dr. Seuss plants.
Yes,
Yes,
I like my weird Dr. Seuss plants.
me too. Me too. Me too. And so, how did that happen? And so, when we maybe we should say to people, what is a Dr. Seuss plant? I mean, like I think the ones the cordiciform plants. I don't know if everyone will know what those are, but maybe you can tell us a little bit. Those are sort of the Dr. Seussiest of all, I think.
Yeah, I like a variety of different Dr. Seuss plants, but one of them, like you mentioned, is the cordiciform plants that have that, water storage fat trunk of a base. And I just find them so interesting. And over time, as some part of the caudex will form under the soil. So a lot of times when these plants have been, in a grow pot for years, you can actually uplift their roots and expose more of that. And then over time, you can kind of shape them around rocks and different things like that. So you get some really interesting ones that are sort of found in the, forgotten about nurseries and different collectors. And yeah, I have fun playing around with all the different forms and shapes of them.
Yeah, so some of these ones, these fat plants, these cordiciform plants with this swollen caudex, this swollen base of the stem. Let's name a couple of those. I mean, like I've had for 30 something years a shaving brush tree,
Sure.
which is, I think, from like the Caribbean and Central America, Southern Mexico. Pseudobombax is
Yes,
the genus.
that's one of my current favorites. I kind of go
Oh.
through cycles with which plants I like to use the most, and Pseudobombax are probably one of my favorites right now.
And what, when you tell, so it's not your average house plant. It doesn't look like a pothos, right? You know what I mean? It's
Yeah,
not
not
some
at
pretty,
all,
it's
no.
not a little bunch of beautiful little colorful leaves at spilling out of a pot or something. That's not, it has this crazy swollen thing and this storage organ that serves a purpose. But how would you describe to the customer? And do they all freak out when you first show them these things?
Yeah, I think one of the things I love about the showroom is just the interesting things that we have in there. Sometimes people just come and like to walk through the showroom to see kind of the things that we have, because we're getting, plants from collectors that have been collecting these for decades. And then they come into our collection and we're pairing them with different vessels. But back to your question about the Pseudobombax, a lot of them have this sort of really interesting like green veining. I know you sent me a photo of yours,
Yes.
and the base of it has sort of like this, it almost looks like a volleyball or like a tortoise shell, kind of like Willy's shell or tortoise.
Well, when we should say, just to give him credit, Willie is your, how old is he now? He's seven, is he seven?
Willie just turned 8 in
Oh, just
August.
turned 8. Okay.
He's
So.
the African sulcata tortoise that we rescued from a rescue down in San Diego, and he lives at our showroom. And he's become our little mascot,
Or a
and
big mascot is the case,
big
maybe,
mascot. Yes, and
once
about
he's.
to get much much bigger. So
Yeah.
he'll reach to be about 200 pounds someday.
Oh boy. But these plants, the base of a Pseudobombax, for instance, it's not smooth necessarily. It's kind of craggy, and it has mine has some green on it, almost as if it photosynthesizes from the bark, so to speak, which, there are plants that have that
Sure.
characteristic. Yeah. And do people like, so people come in and they're thinking maybe they want to work with you or whatever. I mean, at first, do you think people are startled? Because I don't even know what drew me to them in the first, these kinds of plants in the first place, but they're definitely unusual.
Yeah,
But yeah.
I think the one thing that one of my favorite things to do with these more interesting, strange plants, if you will, is kind of view them as their own piece. So a lot of times
Yes.
in a house or an interior, you'll have a plant kind of shoved in the corner. I really like to make the plant front and center, so you can have this big, beautiful room. And we do a lot of photo shoots and work with interior designers. And it's one thing I love to do is these little tabletop pieces that can really take front center stage in this photo of this gorgeous, interior. So kind of viewing plants as their own piece of art or object is kind of how I view it. Of course,
Yes.
you do anything from, a small tabletop, that's, in like a small 12-inch low dish to, 15-foot trees. So we do kind of everything in between. But one of my personal favorites is really working with some of these like more small, interesting plants to kind of showcase their beauty.
And you just said low dish, and that's the other thing that's it was is interesting looking at pictures on your website and the pictures that we did for the Times and so forth. You are daring in your juxtapositions of plant and pot. You don't have a lot of things that look like a quote flower pot, you know what I mean? The traditional dimensions or whatever proportions.
Yeah, that's one thing I really like to do is kind of show off more the plant. And I think when you have this low dish, it sort of allows the plant to shine. You can't really do that with every plant, but some of the cordiciform plants that we talked about, or the pseudobombax or Phocaea edulis, it allows you to plant these in more of a shallow container. And that kind of gives a little bit more of breathing room for the plant to kind of shine versus taking up a big, typical flower pot on top of a tabletop, because it proportion wise, it might be too tall. So kind of making the pot a part of the piece. And we work with different local artists and ceramicists. And then we source a lot of vintage containers as well from, different flea markets or antique shows, and lots of estate sales as well. So always on the hunt for different interesting vessels to pair these plants with.
It's and the there are other sort of swollen based plants, like I think you use some baobab trees, the Adansonias, and the Queensland bottle tree. I think that's Australian, right? Brachychaeton, I think it's called. Is that right?
The
Brachychaeton.
Brachychaeton rupestris is the one I like to use a lot. They
Yeah.
always have a really interesting twisted trunk and a root system below the soil, and over time you're able to expose more of the root. And especially I love when they're pot bound. So when one of these trees has been grown in a nursery pot for years, they'll start to twist on themselves, and then when you expose that, there's all sorts of interesting things happening, and you don't really know. That's the beauty of it too, is you don't really know until you uproot some of these things and play around with it. So I think one of my I don't know, my methods is play. Having like a small nurse I ha the back of our showroom is like our back of house nursery stock area, where we just have a lot of plants that we just got in from collectors or growers. And a lot of it is just like experimenting and playing and seeing what sorts of roots you find underneath the soil. But the Queensland bottle tree is a really interesting one that you can play around with the root structure and twist it around a rock, or place multiples together to make a bigger arrangement. So I have a lot of fun with those ones for sure.
And it's not like what you're talking about is you're not taking a big plant out of its pot and trying to shove its roots around a rock and it's done that day. This is a process, yes. This training is a process.
It's a mix. Sometimes, like with the bottle trees, you are able to get a composition that looks really beautiful and finished, and it is if it's been trained for years and years.
Okay.
So sometimes I will do that, but again, it all kind of depends on what you're finding underneath the soil, with that specific plant. But yeah, there's others that like I will do. I experiment a lot too, so I'll do something where I'll pull up a bottle tree, wrap it around a rock, bury it back underneath the soil, and allow that root structure to attach itself around the rock. That takes more time. And then you also don't really know what you're getting, a year or two later when you pull it back up, if it attached or if it grew around. Oftentimes with those, I find really interesting things happen. And Nate, as you know, nature is going to do what it's going to do. And we can, be the artist or the guide to it, but it's still going to have a, its own way of doing things.
Yeah, I would think the first time doing that. Taking a plant out of the soil, looking at its roots, and then saying, "Oh, I think I'm going to train it around a rock," and I put it back in a pot, obviously, but trained over a rock so it's partly exposed, part of its root system is exposed, and adding to the artfulness, the sculptural quality of it, must be a little nervous making, though. I mean, I think you said you do that with what are they? Some of the rock figs as
Yeah,
well.
some of the rock figs as well. When you manipulate their roots and expose them, and then give them you can do, there's different methods. Like you can put sphagnum moss around it and keep that damp and the roots will thicken, or you can put it back in the soil and it'll start to thicken a little bit slower. Almost all the plants that we do this with will go into some type of initial shock, which can be alarming for customers or for us. Sometimes we'll have something planted out and it looks beautiful in the moment, but I know because I just manipulated the roots and pruned back, it will go into some type of shock. So, just being careful with, how soon you're letting something go out the door before, just to make sure that it recovers quickly. 'Cause yeah, when you're manipulating that much root structure on a plant, it sometimes they even die. So I've killed a lot of plants, unfortunately. But yeah, they typically will go into some sort of initial shock period.
And that speaks to particularly because you're in business and you want to minimize the
Yes,
mortality and so
absolutely.
forth. But also for those of us who have something we love, the timing is important of when we're going to uproot something and try, whether it's just for repotting because we think it needs a larger space or whatever, freshening of the soil. And by the way, with the kinds of plants we've been talking about, I'm assuming we're meaning almost like a cactus mix or something when we talk about soil. Yes, we're talking about something with
Yeah,
fast draining.
very well draining soil, and we'll typically add like a fair amount of perlite or pumice, or like a coconut core, to help with the aeration of the soil to make sure that they, especially if there's, unfortunately, a lot of the containers that we use, we end up sealing because they're going on a very expensive table, and we don't want that to get ruined. So we really live by our moisture meter and finger checks with the soil to make sure that plants aren't getting overwatered. But with that, you're wanting to make sure that you have a really well aerated soil.
So you're testing with a moisture meter when it doesn't have drainage. You're testing with a moisture meter regularly to give you a hint. It's not the ultimate
Yeah, you
perfect.
can't really trust them perfectly. But you, another thing we'll do is put like a wooden stake in there, and when you pull it out, you can kind of see like a little bit further down if the soil is still damp, or finger checks and that sort of thing as well.
Are there sort of if you were saying to people which plant to start with, so to speak, if they wanted to delve into, say, these plants with these swollen bases, these very naturally sculptural. And by the way, it's almost like we're a lot of these are trees in their homelands,
Oh yeah.
and they're and they come from places that have a severe dry season usually, which is why they have that big swollen storage place, right, for their what they need to get through the tough times.
Sure.
But you're almost like bonsaiing them, aren't you? Is that what's
Yeah, like if you ever see like the Australian bottleneck tree out in the wild, I mean some of these trunks turn into these fat, 5, 6 round diameter trunks, and they can be short, fat little trees, like at the Huntington Gardens, where I first got really interested in some of these plants. You can see some of them there that are just wild, just how big they get. And what we do is take them at like a younger age, or if they've been con and some of them are much older, but they've been contained to this nursery pot, so it's almost like self-bonsaied a little bit, so it keeps them contained. It'll start to fatten the trunk or the base. So yeah, I guess what we're doing is a form of bonsai, definitely not your traditional bonsai, but I guess I don't know if I would call it bonsai or not, but we're manipulating plants, so I think it's some form of it.
No, I just meant in terms of it's almost like the process.
Yeah,
It,
yeah, yeah.
yeah. If with a very different plant palette.
Yes.
And I even though I've had, as I mentioned, the shaving brush tree for so many decades, I'm embarrassed to admit, I never even realized I could prune it. Like I'm the only person I knew who had this plant, right? So for all those
Oh yeah.
years, I bought it at the Philadelphia Flower Show in the vendor area a million years ago, and I brought it home and I didn't know anything. And it's not like there's a handbook that has all this in it, especially not 30 something
Yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
And so you also, besides playing with maybe exposing some roots of some of these plants, you also do some adjustments to the tops of them, yes?
Yeah, we heavily prune plants, and I think that allows it to open different canopies, and also depending on what space you're putting it in, you may have it on like a coffee table where you want to be able to see through it. So we'll open up the canopy a little bit. But yeah, we'll prune back plants quite a bit. Best to do that in like late spring, early summer. That way it allows the tree to kind of, as it's entering its growth phase, to pop back pretty quick.
Right. And so similarly with the timing is so essential. We're not going to do this when they're dormant because a lot of these plants do go dormant. Again, they come from places where, a lot of these cordiciform plants do go dormant because they come from places where they're accustomed to having a dry season. And so similarly with the repotting, you don't just do it any old time, right? Don't you time that carefully too, don't you?
Some of them are more forgiving than others, but it will just kind of affect the time frame in which they'll come back. So a lot of the rock figs, they'll hang, at least here in Southern California, they'll hang on to their foliage most of the year. They definitely thin out in the fall and winter. But especially like if we have one indoors with, next to a window with really good light, I think a lot of it has to do with the temperature changes. So a lot of those, even the pseudobombax, I have a couple of clients that have a really beautiful pseudobombax and it's in a southern facing window. And typically, outside all of mine will lose all their foliage, which I imagine yours probably does too.
Mine does. It hasn't gone to sleep this year, and I don't know why yet. But it typically would by around now, and it stays asleep for many months. And I don't even water it at all during those months because I'm a terrible person, but it seems to be have been fine with that,
You've
so
had it for what, 30 years, you said?
30, 35 years,
Wow, amazing.
and I haven't repotted it in at least 25 of those years.
Oh, incredible. Yeah,
So.
a lot of the plants I like to work with, thankfully, are pretty forgiving. I think some of the tropicals that are a little bit heavier fertilizer feeders, you do, like rule of thumb for house plants is potting every 2 to 3 years. But some of the like the Phokia, the pseudobombax that we've been talking about, those are quite forgiving in many different ways, as long as they're not getting waterlogged. I think that's the main thing that people do is love their plants a little too much, and they see maybe some leaves start to yellow, especially on some of these more deciduous plants that have a rest period. They see yellowing leaves or drooping leaves, and they just go water more because that's what we know what to do with them, and that's usually what ends up killing the plants in my experience.
Right. So I
Versus,
want, yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I wanted to ask you about, it's easy to find, I sort of hinted in the introduction, it's easy to find, quote, house plants. They're everywhere. They're almost, they're even in the supermarket. So it's, but some of these, not so much. So, like I said, I bought mine years ago at, this at the vendor area of a flower show, specialty places. Is there trade in these, legal and conscientious trade? I mean, how do you find them? I mean, where do you look for unusual house plants like you like to adopt?
It started with going to a lot of the nurseries that I knew, and then just kind of, plant people are plant people, and usually even these people that have nurseries have back area, that are selling more commercial to office buildings and just your typical house plants. A lot of these people also have areas in the back that have, things that they've, come across or collected over years. That they're willing to give up. Sometimes that's also where you find the plants that are not for sale, which I'm always after.
So the ones that have almost been forgotten about, right? That have been put in the back and they don't want to throw them away, but they're not really sure, they don't feel that they show well out in the front on the shelf with the other stuff. Right.
And that's the thing is I find that some of those are the most beautiful. They have interesting shapes, and they don't necessarily have to be quote unquote a rare plant. They can sometimes just be overgrown and have interesting form for them to be beautiful. And I think sometimes they just need that pruning, or paired with the right container to show off what they really can be. But yeah, we're always on the hunt for interesting plants, especially here in Southern California, and we're next to Arizona where there's some interesting growers. Where I'm at some of those trade shows, like the one that you were at, and meeting the vendors and then talking to them about what I'm looking for, what I like to do. And they're like, oh, I have this collection, or I know this person. So it's all about relationships too, is just getting to know some of these different collectors and growers who are showing plants at some of the, like inner city shows and things like that. So,
Yeah. And pro yeah. And so we have like a minute or two left, but probably estate sales, even sometimes yard sales, you find plants at. And Facebook Marketplace, have you done that? Do you do that?
We are on Facebook Marketplace
Oh.
every day. We're at estate sales. I've developed relationships with estate sale managers, so some of them will let me know first, because plants aren't probably the main thing that they're trying to sell at these estate sales. They're sort of
No.
an afterthought. So I have developed relationships where I get to run into these estate sales before they open. Sometimes I'm finding great containers, but a lot of the times what I'm looking for is the plants. There's interesting estates up in Beverly Hills. I was at one last year where I just found a bunch of incredible plants that were just in these, terracotta pots, and just offered to take all of them. So always finding stuff like that. I have actually today one of my designers, he's down with our truck in San Diego, and he has about 15 different nurseries that he's going to. And he's been sending me photos yesterday and today of things that he's finding. So between myself and my three designers, we're always on the hunt, different markets and estate sales and Facebook Marketplace. So we're always on there. And it's funny, a lot of times, he'll send me a listing on Facebook Marketplace, and I'm like, yep, I already saw it. I already put an offer in. So it's
Oh.
like a little bit of a treasure hunt. We have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to talk to you, Rob Moffat from the House Plant in Los Angeles. Yeah, you remind me, the way you're talking just then reminds me of a friend of mine who has an antique store, and he goes junking, as he calls it. You know what I mean? And he's like just scouring the place, scouting all of it, and he has all his special sources. So it's kind of fun to think about that. And I'm definitely going to my next time I go to my favorite nursery, I'm definitely going to ask the owner if they've got some stuff stashed in the
Absolutely.
back that's, a little overlooked, and maybe I can adopt somebody with personality.
You'll have to let me know when you find some
All
interesting
right. Well,
things.
thanks for making time today, and I'll talk to you soon again, I hope.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.